State Farm agents are one of a kind. They understand insurance and share a genuine concern for others. State Farm agent Susan Casper works very hard every day to help people find the right products for their insurance and financial needs. From homeowners and renters to retirement planning, please call Susan Casper today to talk about which products are best for you. Get to a better state. State Farm.
When I was little, I didn't talk for a long time. I liked things to always be the same. Anything new or different would scare and upset me. I was very sensitive to lights and sounds. It was almost like I had bigger eyes and ears than everyone else. So I built secret hiding places where nothing could get in. I didn't like looking people in the eye. It made me feel uncomfortable. I'd throw big tantrums over little things, like when my socks didn't match. Sometimes I'd do the same things over and over. Until one day, I found out I had autism. My family got me help. Slowly, I learned how to live with it better.
You can see signs of autism in children as young as 18 months. Early intervention can make a lifetime of difference. Learn the signs at autismspeaks.org/signs. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
When you need to know.
Some of those things like the animals and stuff, we can't. There's a lot of kids that have year-round animals. Maybe we could do something, be more of a regional area type for 4-H. I don't know. That's one of the things that we're asking right now as groups and trying to plan out.
On the air first when seconds count.
Don't have very much experience with e-learning. We just haven't been an e-learning district. But we now have learned that e-learning is more for 1 or 2 days and not meant to be for the long haul.
The news team you've come to depend on.
We want to go ahead and start making plans for getting things open back up and what that's going to look like. But I think that's wishful thinking at this point. We asked everybody to stay vigilant through the 20th, which is next Monday. So I'm hoping, praying that by next Monday we can start relaxing things. But it's wishful thinking at this point.
Your official weather station when you need to know. WILO.
WILO and Casper Media are members of the exclusive International Broadcasters Idea Bank. Casper Media and 99 other broadcasters from around the world come together to trade ideas on how to better serve our communities and our listeners. A member of the International Broadcasters Idea Bank since 1991, Casper Media has hosted the Idea Bank convention throughout the years. Casper Media and Idea Bank, constantly working to better serve you. Depend on WILO.
Welcome back to Inside the Huddle, sponsored by your State Farm insurance agents, Susan Casper and Tony Theofanis. I'm your host, Ken Hartman. We thank our first guest, who is Don Stock. Now we're going to be joined by the Senior Associate Commissioner for the Missouri Valley Conference, and I guess more specifically, football. I'm trying to let something pod down here before I get too far. I would guess probably more so football. We have Patty Viverito. Patty, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, Ken.
So let's go and get your official title, because there's two kind of branches of the Missouri Valley, right?
Well, there's actually two separate leagues. We both happen to be branded as Missouri Valley.
Okay.
Probably the one, if we're talking football, is I'm Commissioner of the Missouri Valley Football Conference.
Okay, and as I told you, I met you, gosh, it's been two, we don't want to talk about how many years ago that's been, but when we had the media day down in St. Louis, and that's, I'm going like, and you're still with them. That's great.
Been doing this a long time. I'm still having fun.
That's the important thing. So, I guess the thing of it is that how are you guys going to try and do things, especially for football this year? Do players have to have masks? Do they have to have protection equipment? Or how are we going to do this year?
Well, I would say that the details are undecided. I think the commitment is strong. I happen to be a member of the NCAA Football Oversight Committee, and it's a group of about a couple dozen folks representing all levels of Division I football. And it's our assignment right now to try to figure out how we play football this fall. And the good news is that we're pretty optimistic. It looks promising. We meet with Dr. Brian Hainline, who's the chief medical officer of the NCAA, pretty much on a weekly basis. And every day that goes by, there are new developments that seem to make it more and more promising that we will play football this fall.
Okay, but I guess my question is, you know, with football being a contact sport and this supposedly a contact disease, how do you avoid not having people become infected?
Well, I think that there are many precautionary steps that can be taken, and you've named a few, and some of them are going to revolve around how we manage practices and strength and conditioning, and it's going to be different. You know, the weight rooms aren't going to be crowded. The training rooms aren't going to be crowded. We're going to be practicing social distancing. And probably most importantly, we're going to be testing. And I think it's fair to say that every person that's going to be involved in a Saturday football game is going to be tested the night before, and that's or the day before. And that's not just the players. It's going to be everybody that's going to be inside what we'll call the inner bubble. You know, so that's officials, and that's game day operations. It's pretty much anybody that's going to be on the field. And we're going to play with a pretty high level of assurance that the folks that are involved are virus-free, and it'll be a safe and healthy way to play the game.
Now, you said you're going to have temperature checks. Are they going to be before the game and also after the game, or are you going to give them a little time after the game to kind of...
Oh, I don't think it's going to be temperature checks. That'll be part of the daily protocol.
Okay. All right.
But I think we're talking about COVID-19 testing.
Okay.
So that there we will have, medical evidence that the folks that are involved in the game, again, not just the players, but everybody on the field, will have been tested and demonstrated to be COVID-free.
Now, if you're going to do that, you can do that the day of the game?
Probably the day before. And,
okay.
And again, the whole testing environment changes almost daily.
Mm-hmm.
And so right now the testing is pretty expensive, and a lot of it involves, sending samples off to labs. What we really need to get to be efficient and cost-effective is going to be, point of contact testing. So, rapid results that you can get them with, within a few minutes, like on the site. That would be a huge breakthrough, and we're getting close to that.
Yeah.
Or something called batch testing, where you can test a lot of different samples with a single test, which would make it much more cost effective.
Yeah, I know. We got a testing center around here, but it's anywhere from 48 to 72 hours later before we find out anything.
Right, and we're somewhat confident that the testing environment is going to be very different. Certainly 6 to 8 weeks from now.
Okay. How are you going to handle people who are asymptomatic? I saw a thing the other day where about 80% of the people who have had it or who have it are asymptomatic. How are we going to handle that?
Well, you're asking me a lot of medical questions.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that.
I didn't even sleep at a Holiday Inn last night. So I'm not sure that I should pretend to be a medical expert here.
Mm-hmm.
What I will try to do is relay information that I've gotten from medical experts. So, asymptomatic is a huge part of the puzzle, which is why I said testing, not temperature checks,
okay,
are really the way to go.
All right. I didn't want to make this into, Dr. Phil or whatever this morning, so. But, people don't know that the Missouri Valley is one of the oldest conferences around. Matter of fact, it's, only 12 years after the Big Ten, so. It's the third oldest conference going. So, but the thing I think people really don't know is the fact you guys are spread out everywhere.
In terms of the membership,
in geography, because you got teams all over the place.
Well, actually, I would counter that by saying if you look at the national landscape, our footprint, our geographic footprint, is actually very manageable. If you're talking on the all sports side of things, basketball, we could get by bus to every single member without any problem. So we don't have to hop on planes, which is a far cry from what many of the Division I conferences look like these days.
I was thinking you still had the teams up to the Dakotas. That's what I was thinking about.
The football league.
Yeah.
The football league, yep, we do hop on some planes to get the football. The interesting thing about football is that most of those are by charter, which is pretty safe. Probably safer than getting on a bus, actually, because
mm-hmm.
it's a much more controlled environment. And so, we're not talking about commercial flights. And so in terms of safety, I'm pretty confident that, again, our footprint makes sense.
How much are you guys going to have to rely financially on having a football season this year?
Well, I think our circumstances vary by institution, and I also think that we're a lot different than the FBS, our FBS brethren, who are, you know, making multi-millions on their media rights and on their fans and fundraising. Ours is a much more fiscally, I'll call it fiscally reasonable and responsible way to run a Division I football program. And we are not nearly as reliant on the revenues, nor are our expenses nearly as high. So I think that, yes, having a football season and the revenues that it brings would be important, but we're not at the same level of risk as, for instance, you know, schools like in the Mid-American Conference, where you know, they're much more at risk with their revenues and expenses.
How, have you guys determined how you want to try and handle the fans in the stands? Are you going to try and keep them socially distant, or how you, have you thought that far ahead yet? Where are you going to handle that?
The second of your responses, it's, we haven't figured that out yet.
Okay.
And that's because, you know, we don't know the science yet.
Right.
I think we can count on social distancing. I think we can count on masking. I think we can count on, you know, a much more limited number of fans in the stands. Again, relying on Dr. Hainlein, who is the CFO of the NCAA. He also serves on the board of directors for the Tennis Association, and they oversee the U.S. Open. And we were on a call with him just yesterday where he said the plans are for the U.S. Open to have fans when that tennis championship is conducted, you know, come late summer. So, you know, he's optimistic that fans are going to be part of the equation in that sport, and I think the same will hold true for football. How it gets done, we're not close to figuring that out yet.
You know, because I was really surprised when, you know, Gene Smith came out and said, you know, we have a 100,000 seat stadium, but we still think we can get 22,000 to 30,000 people in. And I'm kind of like, do you really want that many? I know they want that many in there, but at the same time, is it really feasible to do that?
Well, you know, the size of the stadium and the social distance, that's one piece of it, but that seems to me the easiest puzzle to solve. I think the harder, bigger challenge is how do you handle, you know, ingress and egress, getting that many people in and out of the stadium with social distancing. How do you handle halftime when the, you know, the lines to the bathroom are usually quite lengthy, and now if you add, you know, social distancing to that mix, we could have some pretty mm-hmm. incredible lines. You know,
right.
How do you manage concessions? I mean, we're talking about, you know, a contest that's going to last, you know, and if you have to come early and stay late, you know, you're talking about, you know, at least a 4-hour period. You've got to make accommodations for folks. So I think those are the more challenging problems rather than the social distancing and how many people.
You know, and the other thing that's going to be challenging is how do you handle pregame stuff out in the parking lots?
Very interesting, yeah. So maybe we'll have, you know, tents set up, social distanced, marked off in a parking lot, so that, and maybe you have to show that everybody that's in your tailgate is part of your, you know, your self-containment
right.
back at home.
Yeah, we're going to make sure everybody in your tailgate gets tested before you go in, so good luck with that. And, of course, there you go. Everything goes to your insurance company, by the way, too. So how do you think this situation is going to change the landscape of college athletics?
Well, one example I'll give you, and I think it's going to change it in a myriad of ways, but, you know, we've changed the way we interact with our student-athletes. We do a lot of it virtually. One of the folks that was on the call yesterday when we were talking about some of the NCAA business was the Coach Shaw from Stanford, and he said, you know, we're going to be bringing our teams back for volunteer workouts over the course of the next month. He said, and you know, people are clamoring, you know, some coaches are clamoring to get, you know, to be able to meet face-to-face with their players again. He said, we've been meeting virtually, you know, with our team meetings for the last 2 months, and you know what, like, as long as the virus is active and we don't have a vaccine, like, why would I ever bring, you know, my position meetings into a single crowded room with coaches? Like, why wouldn't we continue to do that virtually? Because we can be effective, we've figured out how to do this, and we can be, you know, much more responsible in terms of putting student athletes at risk if we don't put them in, you know, closed enclosed environments with a lot of people. And so, you know, I think we're learning lessons every day about how to do things virtually in a way that's effective. Same is true with recruiting. You know, we've got a recruiting dead period now. You know, our coaches can't go off campus to evaluate or visit, nor can student athletes or prospective student athletes come out on our campuses to meet with coaches. But you know what? They're all getting on Zoom calls. They're meeting in groups. And, you know, we're not flying all over the country to see individual student athletes. So I think we're finding different ways to become acquainted with prospective student athletes in a way that it may turn out to be more efficient than the way we've been doing it the last, you know, decade.
Yeah, I knew there was I know the Nation had a complete whole magazine or whole issue, you know, saying here's things we can do with this situation that we need to adopt. And I don't know how many people have actually done that or whatever as of yet.
Again, I think there are many lessons that we're going to learn from this.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to be an optimistic person. I try not to be naive about it, but I think there's going to be a lot of silver linings and lessons learned from this experience.
Okay. Patty, anything else you want to add before I turn you loose?
I'm sorry, I missed that.
I said, is there anything else you want to add before I turn you loose?
No. You can ask the questions, and I don't have anything to add.
Okay. Patty, I really appreciate your time this morning. Best of luck to you guys down there in that area, and you guys stay safe, and we'll talk to you later on, okay?
Thank you, Ken.
Take care of yourself. Bye-bye. That was Patty Vivarito, who is the Senior Associate Commissioner for the Missouri Valley Conference for Football. We're going to take a break right now and bring on our next guest. You're listening to Inside the Huddle, sponsored by your State Farm Insurance agents, Susan Casper and Tony Theofanis.
Today we decided to walk to school. At the corner, we waited to cross the street. The stoplight counted down. 15, 14,
41, 31, I mean 13.
We took a left on Carroll Garden Street.
Garden Street?
Loud music was coming from a car. Danny's a smart kid, but he gets so distracted.
There were so many other sounds, I didn't know what to focus on.
Danny, Earth to Danny. Suddenly he realized he forgot his homework again.
I left my homework on the table.
At the school steps, we hugged goodbye. I really hope he doesn't have another bad day at school today.
When you can see learning and attention issues from their side, you can be on their side. That's why there's understood.org, a free online resource for the parents of the 1 in 5 kids with learning and attention issues. Get personalized recommendations, practical tips, daily access to experts, and more. Go from misunderstanding to understood.org. Brought to you by Understood and the Ad Council.
Your free local online newspaper, ClintonCountyDailyNews.com, is your number one resource for information as you need it. Right at your fingertips, we have news, weather, sports, obituaries, the WILO program schedule, over 40,000 community photos, online surveys, community events, and WILO TV archives. Plus, click on the info tab to find out how you can contact your local and state representative. Find out what the buzz is all about. ClintonCountyDailyNews.com.
State Farm, this is Jessica.
Hey, Jessica, Jerry Newman. Does State Farm offer more discounts to more drivers?
Yep, like the good driver discount.
So it's for good but not great drivers?
No, Jerry. There's also the multi-line discount.
For calling from multiple lines while driving.
You should never use a phone while driving.
I only make calls from my car when I'm stuck in a ditch or something.
Are you in a ditch?
Yes, I am.
State Farm offers more discounts to more drivers than any other insurance company. Get to a better state.
Give me a call. Your good neighbor State Farm agent, Susan Casper, at 659-5678.
WILO and Casper Media are members of the exclusive International Broadcasters Idea Bank. Casper Media and 99 other broadcasters from around the world come together to trade ideas on how to better serve our communities and our listeners. A member of the International Broadcasters Idea Bank since 1991, Casper Media has hosted the Idea Bank convention throughout the years. Casper Media and Idea Bank, constantly working to better serve you. Depend on WILO.
Welcome back to Inside the Huddle, sponsored by your State Farm Insurance agents, Susan Casper and Tony Theofanis. I'm your host, Ken Hartman. Our next guest is now with us. That's Karen Weaver, who is the Associate Clinical Professor of Sports Management at Drexel University in Philadelphia. We've got to wait this for about a second here, Karen. Karen, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing well. Ken, how are you?
I'm doing just great. Big reason why I wanted to have you on today is the fact that, you know, you're now a contributing writer for Forbes magazine, and I don't know if people really think as Forbes is a sort of a magazine that has some sports articles, but you've had two great ones that I have right here in front of me that deal with the coronavirus and how it's going to affect college athletics. So talk about how you got involved with that, if you would.
Well, I started writing for Forbes back in January, and I was asked to write about the intersection between college sports and higher education. And of course, back in January, that space looked entirely different. We didn't know about COVID-19. We thought maybe there was a recession on the horizon, but we weren't really sure. And literally in the space of 2 months of writing, the world turned upside down. So what I've done is leveraged my experience as a head coach and as an athletic director and also as somebody who studies higher education to try to bring deeper insight into this pandemic.
I mean, the article, the one I thought was really good is that the one, you know, you said without a vaccine, there's no way college athletes can play this fall. And I don't think people really understand exactly what we're really are facing, are they?
I don't think so, because unless you've been inside these buildings and you really understood how they work, they are ecosystems in and of themselves, and they tend to generate a lot of high touch points. They tend to generate a lot of places where people are just congregated closely together. They're clean, but they're not hyper clean. And there are a lot of people who work in those buildings who are not exactly in the most up to date sanitized environments. I speak of equipment managers, athletic trainers, physical therapy people, and then you think about the people that they are taking care of when they go back home at night. Are they taking care of young children? Are they taking care of maybe a parent who's got comorbidities? So having a sense of, we do have 18 to 22-year-olds in there, and generally speaking, they are a very healthy population and not susceptible to having the virus itself, but they can be really big carriers. And I think that by putting them in that kind of environment, I wanted people to really think about what those implications might be.
You know, and I think the picture on the article, you got a team in here who is eating on the way back from a game. I'm assuming they're coming or going. But the problem is most people don't realize is that happens an awful lot, especially in colleges. You know, they're taking the bus, they're doing this, and they're all, a lot of times they're together, and you got to be in those closed spaces, which may or may not be good for the situation that we got.
Yeah, it's really true because we're a very engaged population center. We want our students to be together, be with their teachers, be with their coaches, and so much of that doesn't just occur in one simple space that we can control. If you think about the practice field, for example, a typical football practice might have 200 people at it. Well, a lot of those people are standing next to each other and talking to each other, and there's a lot of different pieces that are touched by many people. The infectious disease doctors call them fomites, F-O-M-I-T-E-S. And those are just surfaces where the virus can live. And how often are they cleaned? The ball is a fomite. The referee, the coach's whistle is a fomite. The various pieces of equipment on the field are all fomites. So there's a lot to consider here besides just how close people are standing to each other.
How realistic is it to have athletics this fall, or maybe even for the entire year, when a lot of this stuff is contact and we're dealing with it with a contact-oriented disease? How do we, what kind of protections are people going to have, supposedly?
Well, I wrote another article about the guidelines that the American College Health Association has put out, which to this moment are the most comprehensive guidelines for college athletics. I've seen very little guidelines coming from other areas. So they talked a lot about bringing things back in stages. So, for example, on Monday, June 1st, the NCAA is going to allow voluntary workouts for football and men's and women's basketball. When you bring them back, are you practicing some of the skills that you would need to have when all fall sports come back, and how does that go? Do you have enough procedures and cleaning agents in place to be able to monitor when a regular team practice comes back? So the American College Health Association provided a good guidelines for saying, you know what, we need to start small. We need to almost have pilot studies. And that's what the voluntary workouts will give us. But beyond that, I really sense, and I think the associate athletics director at Iowa State, who's in charge of sports medicine, really, really articulated this well. He said, I'm not sure how we're going to manage this inside of our facilities, and because there's just too many touch points and too many places where we would have to clean regularly and still be at risk of transmitting the disease. So athletic trainers are on the front lines right now. And one of the things I've said to folks is, remember, those are people who specialize in athletic injuries, but they are not public health experts.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the people we really need to have on our side right now.
You know, and the other thing is that another thing that is a bad area is dorms. Plus, you have weight rooms, and you have eating rooms, and all those other things. So, I'm not so sure there's actually a good way to go about doing this.
I think there are many colleges that are moving forward with the idea that they believe they can solve this. And I've heard some discussion amongst high-ranking athletic officials nationally that have said, we're already starting to expect that we're going to have contagion, and we're going to have people who contract coronavirus on our campuses. So they're sort of starting to set the bar for, yes, we're expecting to have this. And I don't think we have to expect to have it, but I think we need to look at it differently. And unfortunately, what interrupts our thought process is football. And football brings in the most contagious part of this situation to campus early and forces us into this situation much quicker than most experts would recommend. Most experts would recommend that we think about individual sports first. We bring back tennis players and golfers and athletes that play individual sports, and then we gradually go back to medium contact sports, and then eventually we get to the high contact sports. We're doing this completely in reverse, and that's difficult.
Would you anticipate that if somebody, we'll say in football, or we'll just use that as example, somebody tests positive, how do you expect people to try and handle it? Do you expect them to just, obviously the one person is suspended for a while or 14 days in quarantine, but what about the rest of the team?
Well, that's just it. There's two real key issues that I think college athletic departments have to think about this in terms of being part of a community. They are not a community in and of themselves. Those campuses are located either in rural or urban areas that have already been managing the best they can in terms of the local community impact for coronavirus. But now you're bringing a whole new population into that community. So the first question is, how many tests can you get? How often do you test? Who's going to pay for the test? And then once you've sorted out the testing, how frequently you do the test? Because we know now that carriers can be asymptomatic for a number of days before they show any symptoms. So once you've done tests and you identify people that have the disease, how do you then do contact tracing? Well, the logical place to do is to start with everybody who is in the same facility you've been in.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's where most of our team members are. They're in the same facility with the same people every day. And the recommendations so far seem to be to quarantine all the people you came in contact with for 14 days. That could have tremendous impact on a team.
And the other thing of it is, I just saw an article this week that said about 80% of people who have this are asymptomatic. So then what do you do with there, too? That's the other side of the coin.
It is. And I've talked to a lot of college students, and I keep saying, yes, I get that you may not get it, but you may be doing a really good job carrying it to other people, and you would never know it. I know you wouldn't do that intentionally, but that's the risk here.
How much do you think this is going to change the landscape of college athletics? Because we didn't have a college basketball tournament. We didn't have a spring sports season. We may or may not have football this year and some of that kind of thing. How much is this going to change the landscape of college athletics in your mind?
Well, all of higher education right now, it was facing a disruption before this pandemic because of the cost of tuition, because of the demographic shift where fewer graduates are coming from high schools that are eligible to go to college. We just don't have the same numbers we did. And then you drop this pandemic in the middle of it, and it's forcing massive shifts right now. And if you listen to people who study higher education really closely, there's a concern that there's a population of small schools that depend on athletes to come and make up 25% or even 30 or 35% of their total student population, who right now are literally wondering, if we can't bring the athletes back, how are we going to survive because we are so tuition dependent? So it is really pointed out the fissures in our college recruitment system and how dependent we are on making these things happen. And then the ethical and moral dilemmas of asking athletes to come back into our communities and then potentially creating spread. It is unlike any situation that I've ever seen before.
You know, and the other thing of it is there really is no guideline or map out there for anybody to follow. This is how we need to go do it. It's what we've done in the past.
That's absolutely true. And yet we know more about this disease in the last few months than I would guess that we've known about any virus in all of human history.
Karen,
so it shows you how difficult this is.
Yeah. Karen, I hate to kind of cut this short, but we're almost out of time. But anything else you really want to add before I let you go? I think I'm going to try and get you back on again here soon to kind of continue this conversation a little further down the line. So.
No, Ken, I just say, everybody, to think of yourself as a member of a community. It's not just you, it's us.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's going to be a very interesting fall when people go back to school and see how everybody handles things. So, anything else you want to add before I let you go?
That's it, Ken. Thanks for inviting me.
Karen, thanks much. Greatly appreciate it. We'll probably talk to you a little further down the line, okay?
Okay, take care.
All right, take care of yourself. That's been Karen Weaver, who is a contributing writer for Forbes. She's been our guest. That's going to wrap up the show for this week. Thanks to our sponsors, who are Tony Theofanis and Susan Casper, your State Farm insurance agents. Thanks to our guests, Don Stock, Pavi Vivarito, and Karen Weaver. So until next week, this is Ken Hartman. You take care and have a great week. Bye-bye.
This has been Inside the Huddle on WILO, brought to you by Susan Casper, State Farm Insurance, and Tony Theofanis, State Farm Insurance in Frankfort. Join us next Saturday at 9 a.m. for another edition of Inside the Huddle on WILO.